Welcome to another Crime Cast by Revamp. I'm Patty and I'm your host. I have Greg Murray here with me today. Revamp is a 501c3 nonprofit based out of Fort Smith, Arkansas. We are advocates of crime victims and we take cold cases, missing person cases, homicide cases, deaths that may have been ruled a suicide that are suspicious and need a second look at. We have been very successful in a few cases. And today, Greg is here with me, and we have decided that we're going to do a little bit of a recap on some of our previous podcasts because we get a lot of emails and a lot of questions on are there any updates, what's going on with that case. We are currently involved with over 40 cases right now.
Yeah, 40 cases. I think they're 46. Pushing toward 40. Yeah, they're 46. Pushing up every time that we every time we do a podcast, like 10 more come in.
Yes, and we get a lot of calls. We just did a podcast with another advocacy group, which I'm very excited about, which is Area Agency on Aging.
Yeah, that'll be the next podcast after this one. We're going to do Area Agency on Aging, and those two ladies are wonderful.
And we're going to start doing podcasts or crime casts in Spanish.
Yes.
And I'm excited about that because our Spanish community, they are just as much victims of crime as anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so we've had a little bit of difficulty doing community outreach with that group of people. And so we're excited about that. And with Area Agency, you don't have to prove anything other than just give them your date of birth and a street address. You don't have to give them a driver's license, a social security card, nothing. As long as you're a victim of crime, they will help you. And I'm very excited about that. Plus, we're going to do some community education and some community events to help educate the community on crime prevention and crimes and what's available to them.
Yep, that's going to be great with the Area Agency on Aging. Catch that podcast after this episode. That'll be episode 12. And then the one that I'm really looking forward to is episode 13, Mr. Charles Ray Vines. That's going to be a really interesting one. That guy, he was a bad guy.
Oh, yes, he was a bad guy. And I have followed him and tracked him. I actually wrote to him, and he wrote to me when he was in prison. And I have, over the years, become a non-professional advisor about Charles Ray Vines because I know so much about him. I have been able to track down things that the federal agencies have looked for a long time. So I'm excited about that one as well. I know a lot of people have done documentaries on him. I know people have written books about him, but nobody knows the true Charles Ray Vines like I do.
Yep, and that's going to be a great episode. That'll be episode 13, so definitely check back for that one because we also have a funny story about him. It's about something that happened to him while he was in prison.
yeah, we'll share that
and,
too.
We'll share that one too. But today, let's do some updates.
Let's do.
Episode 1, Diane Luckett Nelms.
Diane Nelms was a beautiful girl that came up missing from a club in Fort Smith. Her truck was parked behind the Pizza Hut on Midland Avenue. Her body was eventually found on Christmas Eve in the early 80s. And I met her family, her sister, and I just think the world of her sister. And her sister told me right off the get-go that one thing that always bothered them is that when her remains were returned to them, they were returned without the skull. And that's always bothered her because she wanted the skull to be she wanted the skull to be buried with her remains.
Yeah.
And that would be the final closure for her. Plus, the family never knew what happened to Diane. Diane was a beautiful girl. Beautiful. So we communicated with the Crawford County Sheriff's Office. At first, they said they didn't know anything about the case, and they said they didn't work the case. And then we found where the state police had investigated it and said that they were just assisting the Crawford County Sheriff's Office. So with a lot of persistence, the Sheriff's Office finally came up with a little bit of information. And time went on, and I had relayed the concern that the sister had about the skull. And then one of the deputies called and said that he had a skull that was unidentified and was wondering if I might know of any victim that was missing or missing a skull. And I said, Diane Nelms. So the sister came to our area and submitted DNA and they've sent it off to be tested to see if that is Diane's skull. If it is, then it will be buried with the rest of Diane's remains. We were also able to tell her sister exactly what happened to her sister, Diane, and she said this is the first time in over 30 years that the family has had some closure, and they feel like they could put it to rest now, and they're anticipating that the skull will be returned to them and buried with her sister's remains.
And that's one of the things that I like about Revamp is we try to bring closure to the families. We also try to find the truth for everything of what's going on. And then we also, you know, we're trying to assist the law enforcement and advocate for them as well. So we're kind of that bridge, that communication gap that sometimes happens. You know, sometimes they can't tell you certain things, sometimes they can, but we're that go-between that actually can get the communication flowing again. And I hate the fact that it takes 30 years for some of this stuff to come out.
Well, I do too. And I want to go back over something you said as closure, because each family will tell you that there's really no such thing as closure, even though they use that term sometimes. But after you've been a victim and you've had a family member murdered or go missing, you've been victimized. And when you feel like nobody's paying attention, nobody's following up on the case, or you can't get any information, it frustrates you, and you're victimized all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will admit that sometimes the family has a lot of emotions tied, and it doesn't always mesh well with the agency. So if you're a family member, it's understandable that you're going to be emotional. It's understandable that you're going to be a little bit on the offense.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. But Revamp can work to bridge that communication to where your frustrations are not just aired at the police departments.
And it also, we can circumvent some anger that's not necessarily directed toward the agency, or the agency's directed toward the family. Does that make sense?
It does.
I mean, because that way we're totally out of, you know,
we don't have the emotions, realm. Even though we're very passionate about what we do. When we go and talk to law enforcement, we don't have those emotions tied to us,
right,
as the family does.
We go in with factual information.
Correct. And so we try to stick to that. We are very transparent with the agencies and with our families. You know, we always try to keep them in the loop. Now, there are times that the law enforcement agency will ask us not to divulge something,
right,
and we don't. Or maybe we've interviewed someone, and then circumstances change. Maybe there's new evidence. Maybe there's a new suspect. Maybe there's activity on a suspect. For whatever the reason, if we are asked not to publicize a podcast that we have already recorded, we will not do it, because we will never, ever jeopardize a conviction or an arrest. We will never jeopardize a case.
Yeah, never jeopardize a case, and because we want these things solved.
Absolutely.
And the family wants them solved. They want answers, and sometimes we can't give the answers quite yet to the family because there's an ongoing investigation or something new has come up.
Correct.
And we cannot divulge that information. And that's the good thing, is that you have that. You get emotions involved, and you're going to let something out of the bag. Well, that's why we are what we do. We don't,
correct,
we don't let the cat out of the bag.
So I want the families to know that even though we're always strive to be very transparent with them, there are cases that we may tell them we're going to do a publicity campaign or we're going to do a podcast, and something's happened to change that. And it's not because we don't want to do the podcast. It's not because we don't want to do what we've said. And we will tell the family, something has changed, and we have been asked not to do it. And that's all we can tell you. And I just hope the families always realize that we follow through on every promise that we make until there's been a situation that causes us to rethink our steps.
And it may seem like nothing's getting done, but trust me, in the background, there's something getting done.
Correct.
And trust us when we say that.
Correct.
And that leads us up, because Diane Nelms, it's good that they have knowledge And they have some, which leads us into the next one, which is Brandi Hutchins. Now, there's been developments.
There has.
And really major developments in this case. So we're not really at liberty to say much, except that there is
movement. Activity.
There is a lot of activity.
There is.
And it all stemmed from the podcast episode. And that was episode 2. So there's a lot of movement in the Brandi Hutchins case.
Hutchins, sorry.
I keep getting messed up on some of the names. Forgive me.
That's okay.
But
on her case, I went and did an interview with a former sheriff who has a lot of knowledge on that case. And I had said that I was going to publicize that podcast. But because of new developments, we have held that off for right now.
Yeah.
And it's for the benefit of the case. It's not because we thought another case was more had more priority. It has nothing to do other than we will not jeopardize a case.
Yep.
And that's all we can say about that one. But Brandi Hutchins is one that we hope to see some resolution. And I will repeat this. The former sheriff was Eddie King. He spent a great deal of time with me that afternoon. And he did say, I said, do you think that case will be solved? And he said, yes, I think it's a very solvable case. And he was very sincere when he said that.
And I hope at one time in the future that we'll be able to do that podcast.
I hope so too.
Because it's active, folks. Trust me, it is very active. Let's move on. Not much has come with Verna Sue Hollingsworth. That one's a really tough case because a lot of the people who lived in that area of the Fort Smith area in Arkansas have moved away, and it's just really difficult to find any of her old neighbors because that area has been redeveloped.
And they didn't do a canvas of the neighborhood. So we don't have names of witnesses or neighbors. So we're having to go back through Polk County directories, or Polk directories, not county, I'm sorry, Sebastian County, but Polk City directories, and any real estate records to try to find out. But these people rented these spots, and a lot of times they owned the trailer and rented the spot. Sometimes they rented the trailer and the spot. I did reach out to the man whose family owned that trailer park. And he did remember Verna Sue Hollingsworth. He remembered her working for his father. I think he worked for him and his wife, But he didn't remember a lot about her. He said she was a very pleasant lady. We have had no luck locating her one and only daughter, none. And we found that's very odd. She's just completely off the whole circuit. There's no trace of her. So if anybody knows how to get a hold of Verna Sue Hollingsworth's daughter, that would be great. Or anybody that's related to Verna Sue Hollingsworth, we would
Drop us a line at info@rememberEveryVictim.com.
Or Facebook.
Or Facebook. Go to our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Not much going on in the Verna Sue Hollingsworth. And now we come to Lois Enzi, one of the most interesting ones that's connected to a bunch of other things, but Lois Enzi is one I think you hold dear.
I do. I think so much of her daughters. I've gotten to where I just love her daughters, especially Nikki. I don't know. Nikki's just a sweetheart. And to think that these girls lost their mother at such a young age. What's really sad about this case is it happened in 1979. She was her first full day on the job at Jay's Night Owl. She was kidnapped and murdered and found on the south side, south of Fort Smith, in a field. Now, when we started going through the case file, it came to my attention that there was a letter written by the prosecuting attorney at the time that he was ready to go forward with first-degree murder charges against Alvin Lee Myers. And for some reason, it didn't happen. And we've been told a couple of different stories, but as far as documented, we can't prove why it didn't happen. But we did also learn through the case file that there's another individual who signed a confession that he was there when it happened. And he's still roaming the streets. And we're looking for him.
Yep.
Okay, because he is a very substantial person to be interviewed in this case. So we're kind of in a whole pattern on that.
And then we had, during this case, we had a local TV station do an interview. And the biggest part of the interview that we were trying to get out was that there were four young boys who found Lois Enzi.
Four young boys who believed that they saw her being kidnapped.
Okay.
They saw what they believed, and they said at the time it was four young boys in their early teens that lived somewhere along the area of Jay's Night Owl on 271 South.
Mm-hmm.
They believed that they came forward. They told their parents that they believed they saw three men abduct this young woman at the store. And supposedly, from what we're being told, the parents took the boys to the police station, but the police just dismissed their statements because they were juveniles.
And I said the TV station that did an interview with, what I would like to say is that that part of the story never aired, that we were trying to find those four boys. I don't know what happened.
They edited it out.
They edited it out. And it's just a shame when you're how many people that could have reached.
Yeah.
That maybe we know who those four boys were. But the local TV station, they did what they did. You know, hey, got ratings, got other things.
Time.
But something that is that important shouldn't have been edited out. But hey, that's just me.
No, but that is a very important thing to bring up. Those four boys could be very important. Supposedly, they told several other witnesses that they saw the kidnapping. They believe they saw what they think was the kidnapping. And maybe they still have a good memory of what happened. And it could be very important. So if anybody knows of any kids and young boys that would have been between the age of 10 and 14 that lived around Jay's Night Owl in 1979, July 1979, let us know, because we would love to talk to those four boys. And
absolutely,
we know some people in County that would too.
Yeah, that would tie up a bunch of loose ends that we're looking at right now.
Now, another thing that was interesting about that too is there was a shell casing, a shell slug that was found. It had initials on it. And I have talked to so many people in law enforcement that said this is a new one on them. They'd never heard of this. Not on the casing. Not on the shell casing, but on the slug itself.
Yep.
So it was probably somebody reloaded it.
Mm-hmm.
Locally, maybe.
Maybe.
So that's something else I wanted to mention.
So there was stuff going on with the Lois Enzi case. So we were very happy to see some of the new stuff that came out with Lois Enzi. But right now we're still kind of at a standstill, wouldn't you
say?
We're
in a holding pattern right now because there is a potential witness out there somewhere that needs to be brought in. And as soon as he's brought in, maybe more light will be shed on this whole case. We hope. We got our fingers crossed. I would like nothing more than to see.
So, Nikki, if you're listening out there, we haven't forgot Lois. We haven't forgot her. We're still looking, okay? So bear with us. We're going to find this.
I keep Nikki pretty up to date on everything that was going on. Nikki is a treasure. She really is.
And hopefully we can get her to come on the podcast at one time. I mean, that would be great to have her come in and talk a little bit.
She did.
Did she?
She was on the first podcast.
Oh, the interview. See, you did the interviews
I didn't
get the.
But she's super.
I think she should come and talk with us. I'd like to meet you, Nikki.
Everybody like to meet Nikki. She's a sweetheart.
Okay, the next one. This one was a popular.
Yes, Whitley.
Yeah, Whitley Cluck. That was a popular one.
So Whitley, and here's another thing. We have just fallen in love with her family. Now, I grew up in a small town. They grew up in the same town. So I've known them since we were little. You know, didn't really know them well, but I knew who they were. They're good people. And they lost their daughter. And on top of losing their daughter, it was never fully investigated, it appears. So we have asked that it be reinvestigated. And this was in LaFleur County.
And that's just on the other side of the border. That's Oklahoma, LaFleur
County.
Yeah,
it's the same county where Tara Strozier was murdered, and there was a lady murdered over in George Monroe. There's quite a bit of crime.
So, yeah, that's on the Arkansas-Oklahoma border, mm-hmm. for those of you who aren't
familiar
with the area.
Yeah, you go through Spiro, and it's just on the other side of Spiro where this happened. But Whitley Cluck. One thing that I'm excited about is we have teamed up with a producer who's going to do some mini documentaries on these crimes. And the first one that he's chose to do is Whitley Cluck. And it's going to be, I think he'll do an amazing job. I've seen some of his work, and he does an amazing job. He's very professional, and I think this is just a blessing. Yep. Just a blessing.
Yep, it's great that we're getting a lot of notoriety in the inner circles of some folks, and we're actually getting people coming to us asking us, "Hey, have you thought about doing this, doing that?" And it's helping out.
It is.
And they're starting to look at us like, these guys are serious now.
We're getting results. That's the main thing. We're getting results.
Yeah, getting results. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go away at all.
So let's go to Lorianne Murchison now.
Yes, Lorianne Murchison.
Now, Lorianne Murchison, that's one that I have been talking with her family for 20 years. I spoke with her mother quite often before her mother passed away. And now I've become pretty close to her father, Wilbur Murchison, and he's just, I can't say enough good things about this guy.
He's a nice guy. I love the stories that
he has. I do too. He has spent so many days on the river, not only looking for his daughter, but he was a commercial fisherman. Mm-hmm. So he took me recently, he and I went to the cemetery where he has buried his wife, and he has a plot there for his daughter, Lori, but her body has never been found. And his last and biggest wish is that he can bring her home and bury her next to her mother before he dies. And I want that for him too. And we've had some new movement on that case. We have something very exciting that is possibly coming up pretty soon that we can't talk about yet.
Yep. Can't talk
but
about
we're gonna
that
do
one.
A whole podcast on that because Lorianne Murchison, in case you're younger than 35 or 40, it was a very high-profile case in Fort Smith, very high-profile. And I think there
and this
was...
this happened back in 1995.
She walked out of the Fort Smith jail to be never seen again, not by anybody in her family. There's been all kinds of rumors. Her parents were told horrible, horrible stories about what happened to her. We have been interviewing a very reliable source. I consider him a very reliable source, an expert source, I would say.
Right.
And he has reason to believe that he knows where her body is. And so we're following up on that. And there'll be more on that later. Let's go to the next one.
Yep. You know, before we leave off that one, the number one thing I was so glad that we could do was provide Mr. Murchison with
the video.
The video.
Okay.
With that video of his daughter leaving the jail. And he was so, wouldn't you say, a little distraught. He didn't know what happened, but after he saw that.
Well, I had always heard about this video. I had never seen it with my own eyes. And Mr. Murchison said that he had been given a copy of it years ago on a VHS tape. So he entrusted me to take the VHS tape. Tom, our team coordinator, he took it over to Bedford's before they closed down. Asked them to put it on a Blu-ray or a disc, and they did. But Mr. Murchison hadn't been able to see that video in years. And so he could not really remember everything that was on it. But we got to view that. We did make digital copies, and we were able to provide the family with digital copies that will now last forever. And we have a copy. And I believe we're going to put that on the website.
Yes, we're working on getting that.
Yes, because I think everybody else should see it too.
Yep.
So she leaves the jail and never returns to her family.
Last time that anybody's seen her.
So one thing is I can say about Lorianne Murchison is that we have kept her father up to date on everything that's going on, even things that are going on behind the scene.
And I hope maybe one time we can get at least, you know, and I know he's tired of telling these stories to us. He has so many great stories, and we hope to get at least one time where he's getting up in age, and he gets a little tired.
He gets around better than I do.
Yeah.
He does. He wears me out. Me and him went down on an island, and it was so funny because another party went with us, a third person. And we had to walk across a jetty to get to this island. And when we're coming back, a water moccasin goes in between the rocks. And it's Mr. Murchison and then this other character. And then I'm following up in the rear. And, of course, when I start to step across the rocks and there's this big water moccasin, I scream. And even though he is 20-something years my senior and probably 30 years this other person's senior, he is coming back to help me, and the other person is halfway to the truck, okay? You know, he's getting the heck out of Dodge. But Mr. Marchese comes back. He wants, then he's like, oh, where's your jacket? You've lost your jacket. He goes all the way back out to the island to get my jacket and comes all the way back. And I'm still huffing and puffing, you know? Yep. So, no, he can outdo me for sure.
He's a great guy. He's a great storyteller. And hopefully one of these times we can get him.
And he tells some funny stories.
Oh, he's.
Yeah. Do you know this man has found 8 bodies on the Arkansas River?
8 bodies?
Yeah, but you got to think about it. He's been on that river since he was 15 years old or younger.
Definitely. We have to have him tell the story about his friend. But anyway, for time constraints here, we're going to move on. Now, we did the Bobby Joe Burns. That's a classic. That's the he had some mental issues and
drug dependencies.
Drug dependencies, and he decapitated his mother and
God
told him to and put it at the
Immaculate Conception.
Well,
and then he went over across into Moffitt and laid down on one of the fields. It was snowing. He had on nothing but a t-shirt and a pair of blue jeans.
Yep.
You know, he was disturbed. And, he really was.
He's still where he needs to be right now. So he's
gone.
Yeah.
He died.
Yeah, he's where he needs to be. He was a very disturbed individual. But that was a story back in the, what was
it's
that?
It's one of my favorite stories. It was back in the 50s.
50s, yeah. All right, let's come down to our favorite duo, Alvin and Jerry. These two guys, well, when I say, you know, birds of the same feather,
I'm
going to
say
together,
this. If you lived on 6th Street during the time that they both lived over there, you're dang lucky that you are still alive.
Yes, mm-hmm. These were two really bad guys. How they got together, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. I mean, except they were two of a kind, mm-hmm. and they just found each other somehow. And when you walked out of their backyard, what did you see? A daycare.
Yeah.
A daycare.
Mm-hmm. These two guys were just bad guys. Alvin and Jerry. Alvin is...
Suspected
of a lot of stuff in, would you say, several murders?
Several.
Yeah.
And well, if he didn't do it, I cannot believe one person would be so cursed that many people would be seen with him last and then met their demise.
Yeah.
It just
coincidence sometimes.
Of course, his premonitions, that tells it all too, because he would have premonitions about how they died, and it was pretty accurate
to
have not been involved.
Yeah. You just got to scratch your head on that one. Don't want to give them any more time than they really don't deserve any time.
Who's next?
At all. You did the story on the mayor and the mistress.
Well, the mayor and the mistress, that's just one of my favorite stories, and I just thought the community might enjoy that story, Mayor Borland.
Yeah. But as you can see, we've updated pretty much all of the 10 episodes right there. And, I mean, a lot of good things are happening.
We've gotten some new volunteers.
Yes, got a
great volunteers.
Great, got a couple paralegals. Mm-hmm. God bless them for coming. And if you would like to be a volunteer, you can go to our website, remembereveryvictim.com, and at the top it says how to become a volunteer. Fill out that form, email us.
Mail
or email us that form. Also, you can go to our Facebook page and check out. Proud to say that we are accepting donations now on our Facebook page.
Yes.
So if you'd like to help, anonymously and donate, that'd be appreciated. But we're not going to force anybody to do it if they don't want to. I just want to let everybody know that we do have that donate button.
And we've got a new employee, Oscar.
Yes, Oscar. Yes. Tell us a little bit about Oscar.
Well, I'm going to bring Oscar on and let him do one of the podcasts with us later on. Let him introduce himself, so I won't spoil all that. But Oscar is a go-getter, and he knows his stuff. He does. And he's our first full-time employee. And so I tell you what, in a week or two, we'll get him in here, and we'll do a podcast and introduce him to everybody.
We'll get Oscar on here and then get some other folks in here. I'd like to really introduce some of the other volunteers that we've had.
I would too.
Christy Petty, Robert Allen,
Patrick.
Alice is one of my favorites. Me and,
I love Alice.
Whenever we have our board meetings, Alice and myself, we are the conspiracy theorists of the whole thing. And there, everybody's talking about different things. And we're me and Alice are over there.
I noticed that before, yes.
So we're always in the corner going like, okay, so how do you think this happened? Well, we think aliens may have came out of the space. And then.
Yeah, I hear you. So we've taken in a lot of new cases lately. Like I said, we're up to, I think, 46. And we're going to bring Tom in, and we're going to talk about Tammy Lynn Jarvis. Now, Tammy Lynn Jarvis was murdered in May of 2001, and that is probably the first case that I started advocating for. And I would meet her mother, and we would have lunch, and I just loved her mother. I still love her mother. And her mother's never had answers to what happened to her daughter. Her daughter was stabbed and thrown out in the alley by Garden Lodge on G Street over Memorial Weekend of 2001. And that case has not really had a lot of attention put on it. So that's a good one. We're going to do that one probably in the next few days. Another one that we're going to do is on Ramona Gregory. And now Ramona Gregory is one that I followed for a long time. She was a young girl, 16 years old. She had walked back from over in the Roland, Oklahoma area to into Fort Smith. And then she was found shot and dumped over off of Clayton Expressway. So we have a lot to, we're going to talk about
We've
on that
one.
We've
got a lot of podcasts coming up, a lot of work to do.
We also was recently contacted and got involved in a case of, I think her name was Jody Mills. She was killed over on 64D and around Dwight Mission Road. Mm-hmm. And that has turned out to be a very interesting and yet baffling case, because the man who found her has turned up to be a missing person as well. And his family never knew really how to go about reporting him missing. But he's been missing since about the same time.
There's been several missing person cases that's come our way that we're still working on.
Yes.
We can't say anything about them yet. Around the Hackett area.
We've got a couple around Hackett.
Yeah, I got a couple around Hackett. Got one, a couple around Boonville.
Yes. We also got to do one in Coal Hill.
In Coal Hill area. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening and you're far away, just Google, look for Fort Smith, Arkansas, and then look around the surrounding areas, and it'll give you a good indication about the area that we're operating in. And there have been several times where we've had to collaborate with some folks from Tulsa, Oklahoma on some cases that they're looking into. But like I said, there's certain things that we can and cannot say because they are some of them are active cases.
Well, I just want to tell you a little bit about the one that we were recently notified about. It's Bonnie Bess McFadden.
Okay.
McFadden. She's been missing since 2005. And she's missing from Clarksville, but she lived in Coal Hill. She'd gone to Clarksville to withdraw a large amount of money out of the bank. At the time, she was 78 years old. She'll be 78 now. She was 5'3", 155 pounds. And she was last seen cashing a check for several thousand dollars at a bank in Clarksville on August the 19th of 2005. She was behaving normally during the transaction. But once she left that bank, she was never seen again, ever. And her family is very worried about her. Her friends are very worried about her. She and her brother lived on the same street there in Coal Hill. And they normally had contact every single day. He never had contact with her again. Also, he went to her house to check on her, and her car was there unlocked, which was odd. Her gate to her driveway was open, which was odd. It was very uncharacteristic for her to leave her vehicle and her driveway gate unlocked, and especially to be out of touch with her family for so long. Her purse and some financial papers were missing from her residence. She was a very strong-willed and independent woman, as described by her family. She lived very quietly, and she was a very frugal person, but yet she went and drew several thousand dollars out of the bank. Now, prior to her disappearance, she had become friends with a man who was renting from her, and he was in his 20s. According to sources, she had paid for him a motorcycle and a backhoe, and also paid for them a trip to Hawaii.
Hmm.
And he just took off. I mean, nobody knows what happened to him.
He vanished, huh?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a little concerning.
Mm-hmm.
Her family had tried to warn her that it was an abnormal relationship because he was in his 20s and, you know, she was 30 years his senior. But as most people my age and older, you kind of think it's an insult when people say, well, why would he be interested in you? Well, I wouldn't, but most people would.
If you're living alone, you get, mm-hmm. lonely,
you get lonely
and you kind of you desire companionship.
You know, she didn't have children. She'd never been married or she didn't have a husband. So, you know, she was kind of isolated. She had a brother, but, you know, that's not the same as a companion.
Right.
So I can kind of understand. So if anybody has any information on that, Johnson County Sheriff's Office is the one that you would need to contact at 479-754-2200.
And what was her name again?
Her name was Bonnie Bess McFadden. I'm not sure how you want to pronounce that. M-C, capital F-A-D-D-E-N.
I'm going to say McFadden.
McFadden.
Yeah. A lot of Arkansas fans know who McFadden is, but...
Well, I'm not a sports fan.
Yeah.
But I'm going to see the Naturals next weekend.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Well, we do have a lot going on, and we have a lot of cases, and we have a lot of crimes. And we are going to start having Robert Allen over to do some crime casts on some of the Oklahoma cases.
Mm-hmm. He's actually our vice president, Mr. Robert Allen.
Yes, he is.
And can't wait to get him in here on the mic.
And he's in law enforcement in Oklahoma at the current time, and he's a super guy, super guy. He does a lot of community good works, and he's great with the kids. He's great with people. He's just a good guy.
Yep.
And he's very knowledgeable. So I'm anxious to do some podcasts with him. And like I said, we've only done 10 podcasts, and we're working on 46 cases.
Can you imagine the podcasts we got coming up?
Yeah.
And
we're going to have to start hitting them hot and heavy because we can't keep up if we don't.
And Patty and I, for several weeks, have been saying, hey, we need to do this podcast to update
everybody.
Jamie Valdez.
That's one that we've got to get done in the next few days.
Yes.
Because it is not a cold case. He's actually not been missing that long. But foul play may be suspected.
Mm-hmm. And that's down in the
Boonville
area.
It's in Boonville. And there's a lot to that. And his sister is a very, very good advocate for him. And my hat's off to his sister, Sean. She's been great. She has, but you know, we have a lot of victim advocates that have been touched by crime. We have one that you mentioned a while ago to me, Miss Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
I just dearly love her. She's been touched by homicide more than once in her family to her children. And she believes that this is a calling to be a volunteer for Revamp. And she has been the best advocate for her kids. She's been a better advocate than any of us could have been because she has been so diligent. She's done her due diligence. And I think she's going to be a great advocate because she's so compassionate and because she truly understands. This woman has been through it more than once.
Yes. She came to one of our board meetings a few months back. And we got to meet her, and she's
everybody
very
loves
passionate.
Her.
Yes, mm-hmm. Very, very great lady right there, and she's going to be a benefit to having her.
Well, because
help us out.
You know, we don't belong to that exclusive club,
right?
We've not lost a child to homicide, and I don't know how this woman has made it through more than one homicide, but she has,
yep.
And it's made her stronger. Even stronger. She has a strong faith, and she's just a very strong woman. A very strong woman, and her boys who were victims of homicide were fortunate to have a mom as strong and as dedicated and as compassionate as she is, because
mm-hmm.
she is going to go after their killers,
yep.
until the day she dies if she don't see justice before then.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this has been a great episode, updating everybody about what's going on. It was needed. It's one of the things that I discussed with Patty how many weeks have I talked about this? About 2 or 3 weeks already.
At least.
And said we got to do an update because we're missing our audience just a little bit, and I know they're missing us.
Well, so, you know, it's just one of those things. There's so much going on.
Yes, there's
so
much.
Much.
And there's only so much time during the day.
And I'm getting old.
And yeah.
I'm getting old. No, you already said it. Yeah.
I'm already in trouble. So.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
It's been nice talking with everybody.
So if you want more information on Revamp, you can visit us on Facebook at Revamp, Remember Every Victim and Missing Person, or go to our website at www.rememberEveryVictim.com. And until then, our victims we will not forget.
We will not forget.